The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Faster by, good afternoon. It's 6 minutes after 12. Man in Line's on till 1. You want to get in touch? Call 66 13 68. Text 166 177, email studio at manxradio.com. Today, well, we have the future on the Isle of Man today. Two young politicians. Michael Joseph stood for Keys last year. He's a community volunteer. Intrigued to know how he saved somebody multi-million pounds in a poker fraud. And Andrew Bentley of the Green Party is councillor for Douglas Council. Two young men with a view of the future. So we'll see what it is, shall we? Andrew Bentley, first of all, faster mic, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Andy, and thank you very much for making a 48-year-old feel young.
everything's comparative. So where did the name Cone Ranger of Coney Island come from? Anybody who's watching us on Facebook and YouTube will see we have traffic cones in the studio.
Yes. Well, I took some photographs of some of the cones that had been left around the Central Douglas. I stuck it on Twitter, and this was about 3 days before Charles Gard put his video out, and it kind of just grew from there. And one after another, I was getting these comments, and people were liking it and people were relating to it. And I think the comment actually came from Jo from the Biosphere. She said, "Oh, you're the Cone Ranger." So I thought, yeah, that's good. So I changed my name to Cone Ranger. And then another constituent said, "It's Coney Island." And this is brilliant. So I'm the Cone Ranger of Coney Island for a bit.
And behind the facetious nature of this, there is a point as well about the place looking untidy and things. You've tapped into something. A lot of people see the humorous side of it, but something you're concerned about, aren't you?
Well, let's say for starters, I've tried not to be facetious with it. I've tried to just sort of make it a bit of fun. So we've had references to Manx Cone of the Year and feral cones and alike. And I think with social media, it has opened up a lot of nastiness and negativity out there. And we need to remember that, you know, the officers of the council and the officers of the Department of Infrastructure, they are human beings, and, you know, they have husbands and wives and children that they go home to, and they have feelings. And some of the names that they get called and questioning their competence, they have to balance difficult decisions. So there was no way I was ever going to do it facetiously. And I should point out all my tweets and all the pictures of cones, they are accompanied by detailed emails to the relevant officers of the location. And we have so far managed to remove a significant amount of cones, barriers, sandbags and signs that, as I like to say, had gone feral, that we do have a lot of feral cones around Douglas. For whatever reason, they were put out, they were forgotten about, they went walkabout on Saturday night and ended up on T. Brown's head, whatever. But, you know, they are there, and they're just random, and they just kind of disappear into the ether. There they are. They're just part of the landscape. And you start to wonder, you know, are cones an indicator species of an unhealthy urban ecosystem? You know, why are they here? And actually, you know, the Minister Cruckles completely had my back on this. He's been very supportive. I think he had issued an instruction to get the pond tidied up ready for TT, and they've been working away on that. There's still a few to go. I wrote an email last night. Councillor Horning and I walked the length of the prom making notes about where there were cones. So, and of course, another thing that's happened is I've kind of become a lightning rod for this, that I've been tagged and tweeted and photographs, including from one of Manx Radio's employees, of cones that are found in feral locations on the island.
One by the electric railway sign, is that right?
I know, it's halfway up the hill.
How did it get there?
I don't know, but there's another one next to the Steve Hislop statue that might be trying to rescue it. I don't know.
Michael Joseph is with us. How did you feel, Michael, last year? You stood for Douglas East, didn't you?
Indeed, yeah, and first of all, Andrews, to both of you. And at the outset, I just wanted to say how fortunate I think we are here in the Isle of Man, and that, you know, with the horrors in the Ukraine, I feel so grateful to be here, where we're talking about these relatively trivial problems about tones and so on that we have compared to those people who are fighting for the very life of their nation. And I think that in the long term, the Isle of Man has so much wonderful potential that we need to keep our short-term challenges in perspective. You know, every day, you know, we are all very fortunate to live here and to wake up and to be very grateful to benefit from being part of this community.
Okay, everybody wants to know, Michael, if there's a by-election, will you be standing?
I find that very difficult to imagine.
Really?
I had a crack. I wouldn't want to say never, but it's certainly not in the Michael Joseph life plan. I had a crack moving on to other things in life. I'm not getting any younger. While I'm very kind that you introduced me as a 40-year-old man, I think I have other things to do.
Okay, and briefly, if you could tell us, I mean, it's said that you saved somebody multi-million pounds by solving a poker fraud. Is that right?
So many years ago now, 15 years ago, I guess that's how I ended up moving to the Isle of Man in the first place, is that some friends of mine were playing in some high-stakes game of online poker 15 years ago now, and I guess how I ended up becoming a bit of a world-famous data analyst on 60 Minutes in the US and the New York Times, and then how I was subsequently hired by PokerStars and ended up moving to the Isle of Man many, many years ago now.
Okay, Mark's with us. Mark, you're live with Andrew Bentley and Michael Joseph.
All right. Afternoon, chaps. I'd like to ask Councillor Bentley a question. I've known Councillor Bentley quite off and on for a number of years because I used to work for the council. And I know for his green credentials and his environmental, and good, kudos to the guy for it. It should be applauded. But I've got two questions, basically, for Councillor Bentley regarding the prom. One is, how much input did the councillors of Douglas Corporation and Douglas Corporation themselves get when the plans for the promenade were first mooted? And secondly, can Councillor Bentley go along the promenade one day and have a look at the potential carnage that's going to be caused with that roundabout just round the corner by the Sefton? Because somebody is going to get killed right there, because people come around that corner 30, 40 miles an hour and you're literally on a promenade, on a zebra crossing.
Is this the roundel at Greensill's Corner you're talking about?
The zebra crossing that's there.
Okay, Andrew Bentley.
If we start with the second one, the first roundel there, my understanding is that there has been a safety audit that has taken place by the Department of Infrastructure. I think that's done the whole of the promenade and they are reviewing various things there. I've flagged up things. I mean, the zebra crossing outside the Empress, all it needs is a 4x4 to be parked there and you have very little warning of anybody who's about to step out onto the road. That first roundel, I have noticed, I was going across it once and the car in front of me decided to use it as quite an extreme roundabout, and next thing they were coming in at my side, and I may have been sat in Sam Webb's and see somebody else go through the same experience. So there are certainly concerns there. Like I say, it's above what I do in terms of technical ability. It's down to the officers of the DOI and their safety audits. We must remember, I mean, the roundels, they were certainly mocked at the beginning for, being unconventional. We must remember what the traffic used to be like on the promenade, the queues of traffic, and I've never seen traffic flow so fluidly along the promenade.
Tim Baker said we'd come to love them when he was Infrastructure Minister.
Well, certainly we spend a lot less time queuing there. I mean, there's no doubt about that. Let's see what the Department of Infrastructure safety audit says. They might be reviewing something there. Let's see, that hasn't been disclosed yet, so I don't know what their plans are. With regard to how much input the council had, I think the council had a fairly big degree of consultation in it. We were responsible for the street furniture and the lighting along the promenade, also the decorative lighting around the cultural area outside the Sefton. This all happened before I was ever elected. I was elected in 2018 at the end of summer, and the promenade works began in 2019, and my initial experience there was being briefed about the programme for works and all the different phases for it, and that certainly went out of the window, but that might have been a COVID matter. But it, for me, that was the most frustrating thing about it, that the programme of works just seemed to go out the window. And we ended up with the whole prom as a building site for far too long, and there were whole areas where people were just looking at it going, what's happening here? It would have been better if it had been better sequenced, I think.
Well, can I just ask one more question then? Why is it then that Douglas Council seem to think that it's perfectly acceptable to leave the promenade looking like a waste ground? They took half, well over half the promenade and made the pavements ridiculously wide. And then they've not even, where they've put the parking spaces, because the bits jut out, if you park on an angle, you're literally blocking the road off. And then on the other side, you've got weeds all over the place. You've got barren patches. You've got sunken gardens that is literally just a sunken mess. I mean, are Douglas Corporation going to get around to doing this, or are they just going to sit on their behinds and, you know, take their massive salaries and employ people that basically they shouldn't be employing?
Well, first of all, anything to do with the road and the highway, that is the responsibility of the Department of Infrastructure, and all the design for parking was done in accordance with that. I believe there was a planning application for it, and the initial plans were sort of thrown back for giving too much parking space. They've tried to sort of reduce the amount of parking so that the promenade maintains an amenity value. And we mustn't forget that we're a town that doesn't really have a central square or a park in the classic sense of a park. We tend to do our walking along the promenade. That's where probably more people walk their dogs along the promenade than ever use Nobles Park. So we must remember that the promenade has an amenity value. The strip of land between the highway and the wall of the sunken gardens, again, that has been put aside for the horse trams, should they ever go there. Mm. Apparently it's been sown with wildflowers by the Department of Infrastructure. I haven't been happy about how they've done it. When the council do verges, which are adopted by us, we tend to do them with a curated area around the perimeter. We put signs in to say why we're doing it. And I think that's the problem, that the manner in which the Department of Infrastructure have done it. I don't know how long it's going to be. We don't know. I mean, it's still a matter for debate amongst the department and the politicians of Tynwald. But the important thing is it doesn't have a look of abandonment. And I fear that that's what's happened recently. I mean, thank goodness we managed to get it trimmed, because I mean, I got some stick from some of the environmental lobby for why are you wanting these weeds trimmed, and it's like, because it's the first thing you see when you come out of the sea terminal, and it's that fundamental point of saying we care, and keeping that well maintained is part of saying we care. With regard to the sunken gardens themselves, the first planting has happened in garden number one where the memorials are. I took a look at them last night. So that first garden has happened. Second garden is a more natural one. I think it's always been a more of a natural one, even back in the 1940s when it was first sort of put together. The other gardens, garden three, that's due to be planted, but only on the landward side in May. That's a normal time for us to be planting bedding plants. Apparently they never plant them in April, so I think it's only people looking there at the moment that's made them look worse than they are. There has been salt contamination on the seaward side, and also when it comes to rebuilding those walls, we will need that space for builders to access. So there's little point in putting the bedding plants there.
Okay. Thanks, Mark, for that. Just one point before we go no further, Andrew Bentley. Just tell us, what is Douglas Council responsible for on the prom, and what is DOI responsible for? Because sometimes people conflate the two, and you get slated for something that's not your responsibilities. So what does the council actually look after on the prom?
Well, if we start with the buildings, the pavements, the highway and the horse tram tracks, they are all the responsibility of the highways at DOI. So that is their ownership, their responsibility. We are responsible for any street lighting and street cleaning and any street furniture. The wall-to-wall of the sunken gardens is the responsibility and within the ownership of Douglas Borough Council. The walkway to the sea wall is the responsibility of the Department of Infrastructure. The sea wall and sea defences is the responsibility of the Department of Infrastructure. And the responsibility for beach management and beach cleaning is the responsibility of Douglas Borough Council.
Okay. The loos and litter bins, are they yours?
Yes.
They are. Okay. Howard's with us now. Howard, you're live with Andrew Bentley and Michael Joseph.
Hello, Andy and your gentlemen guests. Just a question to the town councillor. you've just mentioned there that I know it's probably something that was out of your control, but they have narrowed the promenade. That's a definite yes, because you can see that by the tarmac that's been put down on the walkway. And that would be 10 or 12 feet. So they've reduced the total width of the promenade. And you're saying there then that is to help with a shared area so that people have more room to walk. Well, you've got a 30-foot walkway along there between the seawall and the garden walls, or between the the rusted railings beyond Broadway to what was the curbs. And that was more than sufficient for the hundreds of thousands of people that used to come here. We've got nowhere near that now. And why is it that it was necessary, apart from a traffic calming, slowing down and reducing parking spaces, what was the benefit of reducing the width of the promenade? Also, I agree with you that the promenade gardens are not normally planted until, well, the first frosts are gone or the likelihood of a serious storm or something. But the way the gardens are at the moment, there's no progress whatsoever being built on those walls. And this is where, even if you get permission to do the walls, it's going to take you weeks and weeks, which is going to take you virtually through to the middle, the end of summer, which will be too late to plant anything. Now, I know, as I say, and Andy will verify, I've worked in the gardens and I know the gardens. And I've seen those walls knocked down three times, and each time they've been built. And the salt will dissipate. When the there's not that much salt in there, and the plants can live in it. We've had it put before, and it'll have it again. So the excuse that there was salt and contamination in there is only a thin reason. Plants can cope with that. But the main question is, and it's something you might not be into, probably won't be able to, why was the pavements extended out? Was that in agreement with the council, or was it a DOI decision?
Okay, Andrew Bentley.
Well, again, I wasn't in the council at the time when the design process was going on for the promenade. So the extent of consultation about widths of promenades and widths of roads, I don't know what happened there. As far as I'm aware, Central Promenade and Queen's Promenade, there hasn't been a change in width of the road. I think it's more a case that they had to dig up part of the road there when they were putting in the new services for the electrics, for the lighting, and also building new pavement that goes between the walkway and the road. I'm not convinced that the road is any narrower on Queen's Prom and Central Prom. It certainly is on Lock Promenade. I think that was a conscious design decision, putting on, I think they call it a road diet, to try and slow down traffic. I mean, this is the idea that with 20 mile an hour zones, you try and do it through design rather than enforcement. Enforcement is expensive and confrontational.
So it was a traffic calming measure?
I believe so, to actually slow down the traffic. Right. And it does work. On Lock Promenade, you go more slowly, and that is the place where more people cross than anywhere else on the prom. And the other road is probably about the same width as it was before. I mean, you think about it, it was a car on each side, a carriageway that was quite narrow, especially if there's a horse tram coming the other way. So I don't think the promenade is any narrower beyond the second round or all the way to Summerland. With regard to the comments about the sunken gardens, if you want me to elaborate a bit more, the planting on the seaward side of the sunken gardens wasn't just about salt contamination. It was also about having working space for the work to be taking place. The work, we would love those walls to be back in as soon as possible. We are in discussion with the Department of Infrastructure about what their intentions are to provide sea defences, because the legal duty to provide sea defences is one that belongs to the Department of Infrastructure, whereas the walls to the sunken gardens are anything but sea defences. They're flood defences, which is a lower specification, as I understand. It's a big job. I paced it out. We lost about 160 metres of wall in Storm Barra. That wall is between about 1.1 and 1.5 metres high, and it's got two sides to it. Now, by my calculations, that was about 400 square metres, which I had a word with the builder the other day. The labour rate for building stonework is £100 a square metre. So just to put stonework in place on its own, we're looking at about £45,000 just to put the stonework back in place. And there is a bigger issue here that we have got long-term plans to reinvigorate Lock Promenade and the Sunken Gardens, because I think when you look at the Sunken Gardens, you ask yourself the question, why are they there? Part of it was to stop Strand Street flooding. But we also need to remember that they were built at a time when there was quite a high density of boarding houses there, where people were kicked out at 9 o'clock in the morning to go and enjoy themselves for the day, and the door was locked until about 5 o'clock in the evening. And I think it was the nearest thing you had to a lounge if you were staying in one of those places and didn't fancy going out for the day or sitting on the beach.
Councillor, but that is a lame excuse about being kicked out of hotels. You still go out, and those gardens are, or were, it's past tense, a credit to the town of Douglas, and they could still be, regardless of whether they're kicked out of the hotels or they're not kicked out. That is somewhere for people to go, irrespective. And you say there's 1,000 metres, and that remark where you said there's two sides of the wall. Well, as far as I've known and grown up in all my years, any wall has both sides, two sides. So that's a facetious remark. And it's implying that the public is stupid. The walls should be built now and get the area tidied up and stop fannying about and blaming the DOI, who will look after the seawall, which is 50 foot away. The boards that we used to put in the winters down there, they were stored in the Villa Marina, and they were taken down at the back end, and they would go in those slots that are on the walls, and that would prevent any water going up over and through past the shelters into the gardens. We appreciate they're stone walls, they're not brick, they're not reinforced, and they will go down, they will fall down. But that is the council's problem, then they should be rectifying that by rebuilding them ASAP and not sitting making excuses about what the DOI are doing. The DOI are a separate entity and should and won't for several years do anything about the sea defences, and that will be a major job. Now, are you telling me then, and telling the wider public, you're going to sit there in the town hall and wait until the DOI come up with some idea and do those walls?
Absolutely not. We're in discussions with the Department of Infrastructure purely because if we're going to build a wall, what specification do we build it to? Do we build it to sea defence standard, or do we build it to a flood defence standard, or do we just throw up a wall in stones? Which, obviously, that would be the quickest, the cheapest, and the highest risk way of doing it. What we don't want to do is build a wall which is to an excessive specification, and then a year later the DOI show up and spend millions doing a wall just beyond it, which is to a very high specification. So that is why we're in discussions with the DOI, just to make sure that the job is done once. That's what the council leader said the other day on Manx Radio as well, that we only want to build or carry out the building works to a very high specification once. The comment about the boarding houses in the Sunken Gardens is that's what the original layout of the Sunken Gardens was, lots of benches. Now, we don't have that same use anymore for lots and lots of benches. And the use is, well, what can we do to complement the town centre? What could we bring in that would be of interest to people there? And one of the things that we have in the programme is to replace the Sunken Garden 4, where the playground is in a very poor condition. It was due for replacement in 23-24. We're looking at bringing that forward a year because at the moment it's closed. The seawater got into the safety paving. That's why we've had to close it. We wouldn't be covered in the event of an accident that somebody got in there. So that's why we can't let people play on it. and it seems pointless to replace that paving until without replacing the play equipment at the same time.
But there will be play equipment put back when it reopens.
It will
be a play area.
And I'm absolutely adamant as well that we get Isle of Play involved. Michael, you've had involvement with Isle of Play. I mean, they're absolutely on the cutting edge of children's play. And hopefully we'll have an absolutely brilliant playground there.
Michael Joseph?
Yeah, look, it's a wonderful charity. But I think that what our caller wants is he wants action. And, you know, whether the wall is a cedar wall or a flood wall or whatever the sort of wall it is not surprising that in January we have storms that cause damage to our seawall, and they require subsequent implementation and subsequent repair. And so the proper job of a politician, whether it be a local councillor or a member of the House of Keys, is to go and sit on the head and to manage the staff to make sure the job gets done. And I think that unfortunately in our government, you know, we've got too many people who spent too long at university, got too many certificates, but not enough education. And so the result is that they seem to be bored of doing work that they mistakenly think is beneath them. And so I think that's what Charles Gard's video showed the other day, is that we have various debris across our island. We have the you know, this wall, the seawall that is broken that needs to be repaired. We've just come out of 2 years of pandemic. We've been in this terrible winter. Summer is coming. There is a new dawn coming. We're coming out of the pandemic. The future is so bright, and it should be so bright, because we've got the TT coming back. I'm excited for the TT. I'm sure it's going to be great. So let us ensure that we get the work done, get the wall of whatever it is that needs to be fixed, get the garden, so that we can all be proud of our community. Because I think we can be so proud of so many non-governmental organisations like Isle of Play. They're a wonderful charity doing wonderful things. There's, you know, so many groups throughout our community doing great things. And I think that what that caller and so many people across our island want is they want a government that they can be proud of, that gets stuff done and delivers, so that we can celebrate this forthcoming summer of rejuvenation.
Howard?
Yes, I agree with Michael. It's action we want. We've got a lot of politicians and councillors are sitting there having committee meetings and they're walking away from them, and the next day there's absolutely nothing done. And I pray that they don't plan. They have no plan for the future doing away with those promenade gardens, because that will be a sin.
Okay,
and
all right.
The playground there, they say the Isle of Play. As far as I am aware, that is up at what used to be the fields at Palafton Nurseries, which was all part of the Corporation Parks Department and Leicester's Yard. As far as I know, that's up there. It is well used, but that promenade down there, you've got a wonderful facility at Palafton Nurseries and dereliction in the promenade where the general public could be going and enjoying their day.
Okay. All right, Howard, we've heard what you've had to say. Thanks for calling today. I think we've heard a lot about this. I'm not going to labour the point about the sunken gardens. I'm sure the council have heard it 100 times, and we'll probably hear it 100 times again. I'll just race through a few messages while we're about to take a commercial break. This is David, who just said, why is there no street lighting on the hotel side of the prom? What happens if the other ones fail? Another one said, ask Councillor Bentley why none of the corporation bylaw officers are visible, stopping dogs making a mess on Douglas Beach. A note in that also says, you asked for opinions on the new promenade lights, says John. Dull, dismal, lifeless, devoid of character. Apart from an effort that was made around the Sefton Hotel Villa Marina, the prom, I think, being lit from just one side of the road, has disappeared. So perhaps we shouldn't expect cruise ships to call in. They'll sail past Douglas Promenade and be invisible. It used to look lovely from the sea. Whoever decided on the scheme to save a few pounds on the festoon lights, which were on both sides of the prom and also access the prom, should hang their heads in shame. It doesn't look like a holiday town. We're with Councillor Andrew Bentley, Green Party councillor for Douglas Council, and Michael Joseph, the community volunteer, is with us as well on Man in Line. You want to get in touch? Text 166 177, email studio at manxradio.com, call 66 13 68.
Hello, I'm Catherine.
And I'm William, and we'd like to talk
for just 1 minute about loneliness.
Join the Duke and Duchess of Cambridge at 10:59 a.m. tomorrow morning for the Mental Health Minute.
You can now fly with Loganair from the Isle of Man to London City up to 10 times a week, and London Heathrow up to 7 times a week, with 15 kilograms luggage allowance as standard and frequent flyer rewards.
Fly with me.
Today at loganair.co.uk.
When it comes to your home, it's time to say out with the ordinary. Bye-bye boring. So at Lifestyle Furniture, we're all about new style. Pop into our showroom to explore our brand new stylish and eclectic collections. From beautiful beds and sumptuous sofas to dazzling dining and living furniture and more. With free delivery and 0% finance subject to status. Lifestyle Furniture. It's new style. It's wow style. It's lifestyle. Find us at Snugborough Trading Estate, Union Mills.
If the cost you're being quoted to sell your house are driving you crazy, it's time to see red. CG Red is the revolutionary fee-busting service that lets you sell any properties up to £350,000 for a fixed fee of just £750. That's the lowest commission on the island. And with all the backing of Cowley Groves, the island's leading independent estate agent. Visit cgred.im now for details. Buy, sell and save when you see red!
For Kawasaki, it has to be Jason Griffiths Motorcycles. See the range, including the all-new Kawasaki Z650 RS, combining retro style with modern sports technology, plus the limited edition 50th anniversary Z models, and a great selection of quality used bikes, along with Shoei helmets and Revit clothing. Call 825-940 or visit Jason Griffiths Motorcycles on Balfane Industrial Estate, Ballasalla. Jason Griffiths for Kawasaki. Let the good times roll.
Are you taking part in the Manx Telecom Parish Walk this year? And have you got a story to tell? If so, we want to hear from you. We're looking for people to take part in our 2022 Parish Talks, where we get the talk behind the walk. Maybe you're walking in memory of someone special. Maybe it's your first ever parish and you're on a mission to finish. Or perhaps you know someone really inspiring who's defeating all the odds to take part, and you think we should tell their story. Send an email with a few details to parishtalks@manxradio.com. Be a Manx Telecom Parish Talker in 2022 with Manx Radio, your nation station.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Michael Josam is with us, and also Councillor Andrew Bentley from Douglas. A note in from Mick in Grimsby, who said, I see Manx Radio saving cash by turning off the AM transmitter and shouting loudly through a cone. No, not entirely. Andrew Bentley and Michael Josam here today. And Michael, looking fairly wider, you wanted to bring up a few things that are a bit wider than Douglas Promenade, didn't you?
Yeah, exactly. And I think that there are so many things now as we look towards a post-pandemic future, is that we've got to really get back on to measuring and monitoring and improving our community. And so, from my business experience, one of the metrics that we always, or maxims that we always had, was that if it can't be measured, then it can't be managed. And so I think it's really important that we get back into the habit of the government, you know, discussing the proper long-term metrics so that we can manage the performance of the government, so we can analyse the performance of our civil service and ensure whether we're getting good value for money.
Okay. Andrew Bentley, obviously you're in Douglas Council, but you are an architect by profession. Is it a profession or a trade, architect?
It's a profession.
It's a profession. Jolly good. And you are avowedly a Green councillor. You're a member of the Green Party, and you are, is it chairman?
I am chairman. I've been a member since meeting one, and I think after about 2 years, we created the role of chairman, which I took, and I was elected in 2018. I was the first permanent member to be elected, and we're now up to 5 members.
Okay, and how do you, is there an element of squaring the circle as an architect who seeks to create new buildings? Is there any clash with green credentials or green feelings?
Ultimately, I run my own business, and I have to work for the interests of my client. And I have to also design buildings in accordance with regulations. And the cost of doing green buildings sometimes can be prohibitive. I think generally, if you're working for someone that's going to live in a building, they are more willing to invest in things like insulation and heat pumps. And yeah, you do your best. It's very, as a one-man band on a small island where you have to have a wide portfolio, shall we say, of different jobs, it's not always easy to be perfect. What it does do is it does give you a lot of knowledge as to where we should be concentrating. It's very easy to say, you know, wind farms and solar panels, but you know, the first line of reducing energy demand is often something as unglamorous as a roll of mineral wool and a tube of sealant.
Insulation.
Yes, yes.
So how do you feel the government's handling the future, this green future? How do you think they're handling, I mean, things like new builds, you know, they're building brand new estates, but, I mean, not a solar panel to be seen, not an electrical vehicle charger to be seen, not as part of the planning mandate.
We've come a long way. We must remember this. Back in 2018, when Geoffrey Boot was sat in this room and sort of said, oh, we can't fight climate change and treat people for cancer at the same time. I mean, that's what very much kick-started the entire mobilisation of several political parties and organisations, along with the Green Lobby, that, hang on, we actually have no form of strategy at all. And eventually, Mr. Quayle's government employed a gentleman called Professor Curran. He wrote the Curran Report. The action plan was adopted by the Council of Ministers. That went through Timbald and ultimately led to the Climate Change Act. In the sidelines at the Department for Environment, Food and Agriculture, they did revise the building regulations. So we are on a sliding scale. It's all done through a thing called SAP, where you have a score as to how energy efficient the building is. And it's a sliding scale over the next few years where it will get ever more stringent. But we've spent a long time, a long way behind all the adjacent jurisdictions in the...
How do you feel about that as a politician? Do you think we've dragged our heels?
Very much so. It was, I don't know if it was just the politicians dancing to the tune of the developers. I don't know if it was the island being outside the European Union, which meant that the European Union directives that introduced such things as SAP and EPCs in the United Kingdom and Ireland and across the European Union didn't apply to us. So just a lack of will. But yes, we will be catching up very quickly in that respect. It is a planning condition of all new buildings that they are designed to be ready to install a vehicle charging point. So that actually comes as a planning condition on the new houses. With regard to solar panels, like I say, if you're going to spend your money, the best place to spend it is on something as unglamorous as a roll of insulation. But it doesn't sound very good at dinner parties, does it? You know, it's like, look at all these. Yeah. I've got friends with solar panels and they get very excited about them. Yeah,
A note in this is from Andrew, just said, remember when Devon Watson was here a few weeks ago talking about the brand new flats on Peel Road that didn't have solar panels? He reckoned it was the DOI. Do you know how many Douglas Borough Council properties do have solar panels at the moment?
I think there's some in Paul Rose. The new flats in Williston, which have been tendered and the tender's been accepted, they will have solar panels on the roof. To the best of my knowledge, they're the only ones that we have. Do remember that most of our housing stock predates much of this. And the solar panels that are in Paul Rose, I believe, are the solar water heating variety. At the time that Paul Rose was built, the electric ones, the photovoltaics, were extremely expensive by comparison to today.
Okay, David, you're live with Andrew Bentley and Michael Josom.
Hi, and just to agree with Michael there, I've met Michael a few times. I'm sorry he hasn't actually got in somewhere to make that difference, and I'll just plug him. I don't know where he actually lives, and I don't want to come to Ogden. I don't need a challenge. But can I say, Andy, regarding the community itself, when Michael said the community needs to be involved, is spot on. And that's where I think the politicians, the councillors, the commissioners, whatever, are not seeing that. And we have a particular one in Polrose. I was a Williston lad for 21 years. There's two issues I'll leave with the councillor and ask Michael maybe to investigate them, say on my behalf would be nice, is why did they close the lane? And I know it's before your time, but you're still a councillor. Why did they close the public lane between Williston Crescent and Watterson Lane? Never had the answer. When even the DOI minister, Tim Krugel, said they did it wrong. And it was a clear offence. I wonder what's happening there. Have they got a claim? And the other one is, which is a one really for the community there, and Polrose is the community hub, not the pub itself, is the football clubhouse, which is, I'm led to believe that there's money being allocated by the council. Where are we? When is it going to happen? And because you've got all this summer to start doing something, and then winter comes, we need to use it.
Okay, Andrew Bentley.
And I'll leave it with you.
Thanks, David.
What can I say? The Williston one, I can't say anything about that. It's not my patch and it's not my committee. So I'm afraid I really couldn't even begin to make an answer about that one. I'm very sorry, I can answer the question. With regard to the Polrose changing rooms, Polrose got a new changing room back in the early 90s when they built the National Sports Centre. And I think it was a fairly cheap solution at the time and probably wasn't meant to last quite as long as it did. There's been a long-term plan, and I know at this point I've really got to stress that it's not Polrose United's clubhouse. It is a changing room adjacent to potentially five football fields. And Polrose United is an important part of the community there, but Douglas Athletic also play there and Douglas and District train there. We don't know what the situation is with St Mary's at the moment. I have had meetings with Douglas and District, Polrose United and Douglas Athletic, along with Councillor Shrungall and Councillor Byron. We've really listened to them, and it's a very, very valuable thing that we have a chunk of land there. We can't use it for anything else. It's landfill. There's a culverted river under there. We can't develop it in any way. So no matter what, we've got a piece of land there. There's public open space that we would have to maintain. So if we can make use of it, and football seems like a very good use of it, then I think we should. So I'm very supportive of trying to get those changing rooms rebuilt. The changing rooms themselves, the previous application was huge. It was 240 square metres, which is sort of the size of 3 two-bedroom flats. I mean, but and it was highly serviced as well. Each changing room had two toilets. There was an external disabled toilet. There was two changing rooms for male and female match officials, with showers and toilets. It was huge. And with current building rates at about £2,000 a square metre, you very quickly see where this is going. And they've probably gone up since then. So it's going to be a slimmed down version. We've taken it to kind of the limit that we can have a proper functioning four changing room facility. We are in negotiations with the Football Trust. We are confident that we are going to get funding which should pay for roughly half of it. Polrose and Douglas Athletic have both been doing fundraising, so they're making a contribution as well. And fingers crossed, if the Football Trust provide the money and the tender is within the budget, we should have new changing rooms. Unfortunately, we're going to have a year where I think we're going to have some sort of temporary changing room down there. But I think it's really, really valuable that we have two football clubs down there in South Douglas. I mean, do remember that South Douglas is the size of Ramsey. There are as many people there as there are in the town of Ramsey. And in many of those areas, I think what's important, and this is something I feel very strongly with how we plan our towns, we have a thing, it's very sort of fashionable in a lot of the urban design fields at the moment, the idea of a 15-minute city, that within 15 minutes of your home, you should be able to walk to whatever your essential services are. And to actually have the football clubs based there, you've got a big area, whether it's Saddlestone, Annika, Ballaquark, Polrose and Spring Valley. And in certain extents, it's probably the most accessible football fields for people in Hillside and Lord Street and even up at Ballabruey. So this serves a big area of Douglas, and it's within easy walking distance which hopefully, you know, will make it accessible to children who don't have parents who can just drop them off and take them wherever, because clubs like Corinthians and gyms and Union Mills, you know, they're all a bit out of the way there, or they're better serving areas of North Douglas.
OK, Andrew Bentley and Michael Joseph back in just... We're running out of time, we better hurry along.
From the 17th of May, if you're parking at the airport, you'll be able to pay via phone, app, website or at the information desk. The easiest way is by downloading Ringo to your phone from the App Store or Google Play. Enter your vehicle details and you're good to go. With Ringo, you can either pay in advance or when you get there. And if you want to extend your stay, it's just a tap away. To find out more and for helpful advice, including a video tutorial on using Ringo, visit airport.im.
We're simply the best, better than all the rest. It's true. At Motormall's Mega May Dealathon, we simply refuse to be beaten. We'll better any like-for-like deal on island for any of our nearly 20 brands of new and used cars and motorcycles. With offers like these, why would you go anywhere else? Up to £3,000 off selected new and used cars. Up to £2,500 free finance deposit contribution. Minimum £500 bonus trade-in allowance, 0% finance on selected cars. And all with the best deal guaranteed. Motormall's Mega May Dealathon. On now at Cool Road, Braddon. We're simply the best.
You'll find a fantastic array of special events on the dining car this season, with themes and tastes ranging from old favourites like the pie and mash train and the curry club, to Go Greek, the tapas train, Indochina Express and much more. With tickets at just £32 per person for travel and a delicious two-course meal. For dates, times and bookings, call 697 457 or visit rail.im.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
And Adam's with us live. You're with Andrew Bentley and Michael Joseph, Adam.
Hi. I was just wondering, why can they not... The Douglas Corporation, they have this problem with the money flow and we're not having enough cash to do things and to complete projects or to undertake improvements. And I was just wondering, why can't they get any sort of companies from the finance sector to sponsor things a bit more? Like, I know Ramsay Crookall obviously sponsor nearly everything in the Isle of Man. It seems like Ramsay Crookall sponsor everything. They're absolutely fantastic. But other companies in the finance sector don't seem to do quite so much. And obviously things like Marksy's Car Park and that at the back there, which was all built to look like the Hanging Gardens of Babylon once upon a time. And now all the plants are dead and it's very dry soil. But you'd think there was something they could do. You know, I could suggest plant species for it.
Okay. Anyway. All right, Adam, we're just short of time, so I want to crack on with this then. Andrew Bentley, why don't you get private sponsorship for the Sunken Gardens?
I think, first of all, it's not a question of a lack of money. It's a question of we have the money. It was budgeted. It went through the budget. It's there. It's allocated for the year ahead. And it's more a case of moving stuff around, and it has to go through a democratic process.
I mean, just a final word on this Sunken Gardens. Do you understand why people don't understand why it's not happening?
Yes, and we wish it would happen quicker. What I will say is it's not completely dependent on the DOI. If the DOI drag their heels, we will just get on with it and we will build a wall that is robust enough to withstand, hopefully, a storm that won't happen too soon. But, you know, we know that with climate change, storms like that will be more often and they will be more intense. Just look at Laxey.
Okay. And we're running out of time now. So, Michael Joseph, you talked about community. I mentioned you're a community volunteer, Taxpayers Alliance, Hockey, FC Isle of Man, the food bank, the co-op. Why is community so important to you?
So I think the community is about who we are as a people. I think that community institutions right across the world are struggling when so many people have individual Instagram feeds or individual Netflix feeds. But those community organisations are so important to bring us together. And so whether that is at the family level, the street level, the organisation level, whether it be a faith, service, sport, whatever it is, I want to encourage people to join a team. And especially, it's a great opportunity, just in a couple of minutes' time, down at the NSC, one of our great teams, the women's netball team, they're about to represent our island. They're joining a team, they're representing the island, I'm sure they'll do us proud. And so whether it is netball, whether it is, you know, football, whether it is, you know, down at the you know, whatever it is, the service club, the faith club. I want to encourage everyone, join a club, be a part of our community and make it so much stronger.
And hi to all the Irish netball team, because I saw them yesterday wandering around Ridgeway Street. Andrew Bentley.
And just on that message, of course, we have Douglas Carnival coming back on the 23rd of July. If you would like to be part of it, if you would like to sponsor any part of it, we're thinking about wheelie bin racing and a colour run. If you represent an organisation that hasn't been approached yet, please get in contact with the town hall or email me. You'll find me on the council's website. I'm on social media as well as Andrew Bentley, Douglas Councillor, or at the moment the Cone Ranger of Coney Island on Twitter. I can get the I can get application forms to you. We'd like to have a good idea of how many people want to enter. But yeah, we want to bring the community together. We've got a load of local businesses that want to get involved as well. Let's just have a big party.
Okay. If you want to get in touch then, Douglas Council is douglas.gov.im. Is that right?
Yes, and 696300, and just ask, put me through to somebody about the carnival.
Okay. Michael Josom's got his own website. What is it?
It's michaeljosom.com, but it's not about me. I think it's about much more. Let's join a community organisation, whether it be the food bank. We're about to launch a new food bank website in coming weeks. Excited about that. Or whether it's the football, representing the island next week. Get onto fcisleman.im.
Okay, thanks for being with us today. Councillor Andrew Bentley from Douglas Council has been with us, and Michael Josom. I hope we've given you cause to think over the past hour. On Monday, the Minister for the Department of Enterprise is going to be live on air. Dr. Alex Allenson will be talking about TT, bringing new businesses to the island and loads more. And a week today, we're offshore, live at sea. Well, about 20 yards offshore, going to be at the Queen's Pier in Ramsey, finding out what's happening with the regeneration, the restoration of Queen's Pier, and what's happening in the north. But tomorrow, Friday, another open line. Thanks to Barry Redfern producing today. Back tomorrow at high noon.